The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report for Thursday, May 29th, 2008. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group in Decatur, Illinois. And later this half hour, we'll have cash grain analysis with Bill Mayer of Roach Ag Marketing in Lexington, Illinois. In agricultural news, lawmakers are asking the CFTC to defend its view that speculators have not run up crude oil prices. Also, a number of agricultural groups are taking offense at a publicity campaign by the Grocery Manufacturers Association. We'll have these and other stories this half hour. And agricultural meteorologist Peter Levitt will have the latest on conditions across the Corn Belt. It's all on the Thursday edition of your Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of WILL AM 580, a broadcasting service of the College of Media at the University of Illinois.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Learned Seed Service, an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products to farmers in East Central Illinois. Learned Seed Service provides customer services and agronomic information to help customers maximize profits. Learned Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
Thursday afternoon, prices settled like this. In Kansas City, July wheat, $7.94 down 9.5. September, $8.06 down 9.75. At the Chicago Board of Trade, July wheat, $7.43.5 down 15.5. September, $7.59.25 down 15.25. December, $7.81 down 15.25. July corn, $5.82.25 down 10.25. September, $5.95.25 down 10.25. December, $6.09.5 down 10. March, $6.23 down 10. July beans, $13.22.75 down 50. August, $13.28.25 down 47.5. November, $13.21.5 down 35.75. July soybean meal, $3.31.80 down 11.90. July soybean oil, $60.30 down 2.35. June live cattle, $95.95 down 77.5. August feeders, $115.45 down 35. June lean hogs, $76.17 down 57.5. And those are Thursday's settlements from Kansas City and Chicago. Taking a look at outside markets for you, July crude oil at $126.50 down $4.53. August, $126.69 down $4.30. July natural gas, $11.49.6 down $49.9. June ethanol, $239.1 down $10.7. June heating oil, $369.15 down $13.28. Silver contract for July settled at $16.51.5 down 90 cents. The August gold contract settling at $881.70 down $23.30. U.S. dollar firmer at $73.06 up almost 54 cents. The CRB index at 417.77 is off 10.23. The S&P 500, 1402, is up almost 12 points. Ed Kieser's two-state forecast tonight. In northern Illinois, partly to mostly cloudy with scattered showers and thunderstorms. Elsewhere, clear to partly cloudy, lows ranging from 52 in northeastern Indiana to 65 in west central Illinois. Tomorrow in the north, mostly cloudy with clusters of showers and thunderstorms. In central sections, partly sunny with thunderstorms arriving. In the south, mostly sunny and warm, and highs ranging from 76 in northwestern Illinois to around 90 in the far south. An outbreak of severe thunderstorms with damaging winds is likely for portions of northern and central Illinois and Indiana on Friday into Friday night, and some tornadoes and large hail are also possible.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Stuart Peterson. For over 20 years, Stuart Peterson has helped farmers manage both marketing opportunities and risks through their analysis, advice, and action. Stuart Peterson's team of experts and strategic consulting approach utilize the latest technology. Stuart Peterson, confidence like never before. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
Joining us now for our look at the futures market is Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group in Decatur, Illinois. Good afternoon, Dan.
Hi, Dave.
At least for one day, the bears had their sway on the marketplace. What was some of the reasons behind the broad-based dip in commodities all across the commodity pits?
Well, it's long liquidation, and, you know, it can be attributed to, you know, end of the month. Chicago is driven by commissions, so they like to see liquidation or squaring up positions prior to end of the month. So, you know, their commission checks are a little higher. Gasoline is $4, living expenses up, so they do need to generate commissions. Now, I think the broader sense, though, that generates the long liquidation activity is the whole fuss about how maybe index funds, hedge funds, whatever you want to call them, have distorted the market from corn prices to crude oil futures. I mean, you've had consumer groups complain that the speculators are driving up the price of crude oil futures beyond what it should be. So you got the CFTC looking at the crude oil sector, wanting to know whether or not maybe we need to do something to trim back speculative buying interest in crude oil. You had the same thing in ag commodities. You've had farm groups complain about the market not working. Basis levels are wide. It's not converging. They've had meetings with the CFTC. So the CFTC is taking a look at whether or not hedge funds are distorting corn and soybean prices. So I think everybody in the complex that has been complaining about high prices and the market's not working probably can kind of look at themselves, and this is what got the CFTC taking a look at things. People are fearing that Congress may pass legislation to try to increase margin requirements for index funds, may prohibit them from trading particular funds in commodities. So anytime you've got that in the front page, that encourages long liquidation, and that's what we're seeing here from crude oil to soybeans to corn to soybean meal to gold and whatnot. And the two sectors has kind of been on the defensive because of the run-up in general-based commodity prices. As the dollar is stronger here today, and some of these index funds, I think, to my understanding, are moving their equity out of commodities and going to put it into securities, the stock market. Everybody's going to cheer them over there because everybody likes to see a higher stock market. So they're probably going to go over to more friendly territory and get out of the sights of the CFTC.
What are some of the possible remedies if the CFT does believe that speculators are manipulating the market or unduly influencing the market? What are some of the tools at your disposal?
Well, they can ban certain funds from participating in the marketplace. There was talk that they were maybe going to ban pension funds. And, of course, pension funds are the largest pool of capital, 401Ks, regular pensions. So everybody, that's the biggest pool. They could bar them from being used in commodities. They could increase the margin requirement rather than only putting down 5% or 10% or 20% down of contract value. They could maybe require them to come up with 100% of the money before they take a position. All of that stuff would discourage monies from going into commodities. Now, number one, I think nobody has proven that the market has been distorted because of these active funds. I think they are just a reflection of supply and demand, and probably the main reason prices have rallied has been the weakness of the dollar, which is can be totally attributed to Congress's spending, Federal Reserve lower interest rates. So, I mean, I think Congress and what needs to probably look at themselves, but they don't want to do that. They want to blame somebody else.
So let's go ahead and go back to the charts then, Dan, and because some people will look at this and feel like the bears have now have total control of the marketplace, and I'm not sure that really is the case. In fact, I bow to your expertise, but I don't know that very much chart damage has been done in here at all.
Well, you're getting the market to tilt. You're getting lower lows and lower highs over the past 2-3 weeks. So you are tilting the market somewhat down, but I think depending upon how you draw your lines, you know, corn futures can still be kind of considered in a broad-based sideways range of some kind here. But the last couple weeks, you could probably begin to say that maybe things are tilting downward. I think the fact that corn futures as well as bean futures were able to close off their lows, I think that is a good sign that maybe today was kind of one of those panic washouts. And, you know, the longs all came out today. The shorts will maybe come out tomorrow, and then we'll start a fresh week next week. But one thing that I think you have to keep in mind, if the hedge funds and index funds are leaving the party, and there are strong signs that are doing that, you will not have the underlying support in the marketplace as you've had over the past 12 months, because they were the ones that came in and defended their positions when you saw weakness. Now, if you get the index funds out of this market and all you have is traditional funds, remember traditional funds do 180. So if they're long 50 million corn on the way up and then they get a sell signal, then they sell 100 million. So you get that double whammy and you don't have the buying power underneath the market. So I think the market will act differently if the index funds are leaving the party here. But technically, I think the only thing that you can probably say good about the commodity complex here is that corn futures, wheat futures, and soybean futures are all in some time window here over the next week or two to put in some cycle lows. Corn is in week 9. Beans are in week 8 of their cycle phase. So there is maybe signs that we could be making a short-term cycle low in here, provided we don't do any more technical damage than what we've already done. And then the market then will start trading, you know, maturity levels, crop rating levels, weather forecasts, all this kind of stuff going into the June 30th report. And, of course, that'll give us, you know, our acreage. So you're going to hear a lot of private estimates on acreage levels. And then, you know, we'll be looking at all of the crop rating levels to try to come up with some kind of yield.
Thank you, Dan.
Very well.
Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group in Decatur, Illinois.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Risk Management Commodities, with offices in Chalmers and Lafayette, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities provides commodities analysis and recommendations for business and agriculture throughout East Central Illinois and Western Indiana. 866-837-9027.
In agricultural news, New Mexico Senator Jeff Bingaman has set a June 10th deadline for the Commodity Futures Trading Commission to defend its assertion that speculators are not driving up the price of crude oil to record levels. Bingaman is demanding that the CFTC provide statistical analysis in relation to energy commodity markets. Meanwhile, lawmakers are considering whether to introduce legislation that would limit the amount of commodity buying by hedge funds and investment banks. South Korea's agriculture minister says the government has requested the publishing of new quarantine rules covering inspections of U.S. beef, a key step toward resumption of U.S. beef exports. Seoul also announced it will step up inspections of domestically produced beef when its market is reopened to U.S. beef. South Korea says it will also expand its country of origin labeling of beef sold by restaurants and caterers. Argentina producers resumed their strike yesterday in protest of an increase in the export tax on soybeans. The current strike is expected to last until next Monday. Talks with the government broke down earlier this week after federal officials said aggressive speeches made by farm leaders at a weekend rally made negotiations impossible. Cargill Ag Horizons says it's requiring more documentation from producers before writing new crop contracts this year. Farmers wishing to forward contract 25,000 or more bushels are being asked to provide acreage and yield information, specifically total acres farmed, owned, and rented, and acres by crop including actual production history yields. Industry sources indicate the practice may be adopted by other grain buyers as well. Farm and biofuel industry leaders came out swinging yesterday against a Grocery Manufacturers Association campaign blaming ethanol production for higher food prices. American Farm Bureau President Bob Stallman.
Efforts such as this campaign work against the national policy and goal that we have of less reliance on foreign sources of fuel.
The GMA has hired a Washington, D.C. firm to run an aggressive public relations and lobbying campaign to lower the renewable fuel standard. Texas Senator Kay Bailey Hutchinson has called for freezing the RFS at its current level. National Sorghum Producers CEO Tim Lust says the problem is not biofuels.
We have a profitability within agriculture right now to continue to expand and grow more food and feed and fuel for this world. So when those economic signs are there, it has nothing to do with U.S. biofuels. It has everything to do with long-term macroeconomic trends around the world. Certainly we live in a big world and everything does interact, but I think people are stretching a little bit in terms of exactly how big of an issue this is.
Officials at the Farm Bureau say that without ethanol, gas prices could rise as much as $1.10 a gallon over current rates. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Doug Slayton in Galesburg at 309-341-5003. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
When farmers throughout the Midwest try to replant drowned-out corn, they may wonder if fields should be retreated with a soil residual herbicide. Todd Gleason says the answer is as murky as the standing water on those cornfields.
In his newsletter article released May the 22nd, University of Illinois Extension weed scientist Aaron Hager writes there are no simple answers to reapplying a soil residual herbicide to areas where corn is to be replanted.
The other thing that we did talk about in the newsletter article for this week would be, again, if we work with the assumption that many of these fields were actually treated with a soil residual herbicide, we have been asked, can I go back in when I replant and retreat the field? Say if I didn't use a full rate of a residual product, can I go back in and make another application before I replant the field? And the simple answer is that there is no real simple answer. And by that we mean that language on the various product labels can vary. Some of these product labels of residual type herbicides actually say that no, you cannot make another pre-emergence application if the initial planting, treated planting is lost due to weather, hail, flooding, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Other products don't have that type of restriction on the label. They may only restrict the number of applications per season that a farmer could actually make, but don't necessarily restrict on when those applications can be made in this kind of scenario.
The point here is that farmers should read the labels carefully, even on products that have very flexible applications listed. There are sometimes little sticklers, says Hager.
One of the examples we used in the article is Dual 2 Magnum. You know, it's got about as much flexibility on its label for application as any of the residual products. It can be put out early, it can be put out before you plant, after you plant, and even up to lay-by stage of corn. But yet the label specifically states under the precaution section that if this field was treated, broadcast treated, and the first planting is lost due to weather, do not make a second application before the field is replanted.
Oddly enough, the label would not preclude a farmer from doing the replant and then using the product afterwards. But it is restricted as a preplant on a replant if it's a repeat. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Joining us now with our look at the cash grain market is Bill Mayer of Roach Ag Marketing in Lexington, Illinois. Good afternoon, Bill.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Out your way, Lexington way, how are producers doing with their soybean plantings?
Well, they've kind of got rolling again here the last day or two. I noticed last night on the way home from work, a lot of guys going in the field between here and Bloomington and kicking up some dust. So we're starting to make some progress again, but they've been kind of stopped here for about a week to 10 days.
I imagine that at the elevator that business has dried up.
Yeah, it's been pretty slow as far as any kind of inbound grain goes. Some movement as far as, stuff getting shipped out. But as far as the farmer bringing corn and beans in, it's been pretty slow.
We did have some firming of prices along the river and the Gulf.
Yeah, the corn really for the week was pretty quiet, a little bit weaker. But then today we did see a little bit of improvement. And if you look to the east and you look to the west, like western part of Iowa and into Indiana, basis on corn really has been quite a bit better than it has here, which tells you somewhat that the export market is what's been lagging behind, and it looks like we're seeing that start to pick up a little bit, but we've got some awfully low levels that we got to improve from.
Well, it doesn't help that you gain 2 cents on the basis and lose 10 on the board.
Yeah, that's right, but strictly from the basis standpoint, that losing that 10 on the board can actually help the basis to improve some.
All right, then. Why don't we go ahead and get some further analysis from you on your thoughts about how the sell-off went on the futures today?
Well, I think that I would agree some with what Dan was saying. In fact, I was reading some of the CFTC statements that they came out with here today. And, you know, I think there is some nervousness about that. Something else that I think is important to look at on the beans is that you've got, and I was just discussing this with somebody earlier here today, if you look at the open interest in the July soybeans, we've actually got more long futures there than what we've got beans left in the United States right now. So we've got a pretty good job to do to get from now to a month from now, when deliveries start, to where, you know, those long Julys are rolled out to the November or removed, you know, or sold out of the July. So I think there's some, there's going to be some volatility, and there's going to be some, probably some pain for some of those longs as they try to get moved out.
Thanks much, Bill.
Thank you.
Bill Mayer of Roach Ag Marketing. He is in Lexington, Illinois. It's National Coco Van Day. Legends trace the French fricassee of rooster dish to ancient Gaul and Julius Caesar. But the earliest written records do not appear until the 20th century. On this day in agricultural history in 1630, Charles II, King of England, was born. Mary Monarch Tea was introduced to England during his reign. On December 23rd of 1675, he issued a proclamation suppressing coffee houses. But the public response was so negative that he revoked it just over a year later. In 1716, Louise Jean Marie Daubatin was born, a French naturalist and pioneer in several fields, including plant physiology. He also conducted agricultural experiments and introduced Merino sheep to France. In 1855, Sir David Bruce was born, an English bacteriologist. He traced the Malta fever to a bacterium later named for him. Malta fever causes abortion in goats and is usually transmitted by goat's milk. In 1886, Coca-Cola, invented by pharmacist John Pemberton in 1885, was advertised for the first time in the Atlanta Daily. And in 2004, tens of millions of pounds of almonds were recalled by one of the world's largest almond producers, located in California, due to a salmonella outbreak. At least 25 people were sickened in states from Alaska to Michigan. And that's this day in agricultural history. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us for our look at the agricultural weather is meteorologist Peter Levitt. Good afternoon, Peter.
Good afternoon, Dave.
The Western Corn Belt is in line for another couple of rounds of showers over the next few days.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And what's more, the showers are also going to have some severe weather associated with it. I think we're going to see more of this pattern. Some very heavy rain is forecast today in north central Iowa, that's associated with a weather system moving northward from the southern plains up towards the upper Midwest. And this system is going to maintain itself for 48 hours with a warm front producing precipitation up through Iowa and then in Minnesota north. It's raining in northwestern Illinois this afternoon. And showers will move across the state, the northern portions of Illinois, and into Wisconsin later today and tonight.
After the wet and cool spring, producers really need to see a change in trend to drier and warmer conditions. Is there anything in your research that suggests that we're going to be getting there anytime soon?
No, there isn't. We're going to see little flashes of warm air. For example, tomorrow we'll see a warm day, but unfortunately the general pattern of keeping a high pressure to the west and northwest of us aloft and troughiness in the midwestern states just keeps delivering cool air masses down from Canada into the Midwest. The polar front, which would normally be shifting well to the north this time of year, is still going to be located to the south of most of the Midwestern states. I don't see coming out of this pattern anytime soon.
What are the difficulties in this year of projecting long-range forecasts?
That's a very interesting question. It seems that there are some aspects of meteorology that moderate weather patterns and control the general character of weather patterns across the globe. One of these is something called the Pacific Decadal Oscillation. That's a high-sounding word, which just means that there is a climatological cycle in the North Pacific that provides about 30 years or so of warm weather in the western North Pacific, cool weather in the eastern North Pacific, and then it shifts to the other phase, and that becomes cool in the east and warm in the west. We've enjoyed 30 years of warm temperatures in the eastern Pacific, and that's affected the temperatures across North America, particularly in the summer months. And now we're going to see, we have seen, it started last year, a shift to the other side of the pattern, cool in the eastern Pacific, warm in the western Pacific, and this means a whole different array of weather systems and patterns. So people who like to look at the recent past to make forecasts for the future are going to find that it's not going to work now. We're in a pattern which existed about 35 to 50 years ago, and we're going to see patterns much more similar to those, and that's going to give long-range forecasters a headache until they get it sorted out.
Thanks, Peter.
Mm-hmm, my pleasure.
Agricultural meteorologist Peter Levitt, and that's today's Closing Market Report. Remember, you can listen to all of our agricultural broadcasts on the web. Go to willag.org. This is Dave Dickey.